Hello, thank you for visiting Crossroad International Church, a Christian community in the heart of Kuwait consisting of believers from dozens of countries around the world. Our vision is to see all people in Kuwait know, believe, and model the unconditional love and life-giving hope of Jesus. We hope you're blessed by the message this morning.
I found out that I had an 8-centimeter cancerous tumor in my body. And I prayed like I've never prayed before. And I prayed God to, God heals today. I know that. I believe that. And I prayed with other people all around the world. At the same time, I also sought treatment. So I went through, God chose at that time not to remove it miraculously and allowed me to go through 28 days of radiation and 4 or 5 months of chemotherapy, which is way worse than radiation. I was like, this has got to be the worst. But then I had 2 massive surgeries. One was 7 hours long. And then I realized the surgery is much worse than the chemotherapy. Sorry. And it was a struggle. And it was like probably the biggest trial of my life so far. Because even though God didn't remove the cancer, there are still residual effects from the chemotherapy and from the surgeries that affect my life in major ways. And we're going to see why sometimes God puts us in affliction. Because in the story of James chapter 3, we're going to see 3 other men who were delivered but were thrown into a fiery furnace. God could have not even had that conversation with the king. But God did something to allow them to be in the fire, and whatever fiery furnace that you're going through, whatever affliction you're going through, God has a plan and a purpose for it. So here's my big idea for this morning. Jesus' presence and power is greater than pressure and affliction. Jesus' presence and power is greater than pressure and affliction. So we're going to try it in chunks like we did last time. I kind of like the way that worked. So first we're going to talk about trusting Christ over pressure. We'll read 1-7 together. King Nebuchadnezzar, chapter 3, verse 1, made an image of gold whose height was 60 cubits and its breadth was 6 cubits. He set it up on the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. Then King Nebuchadnezzar sent to gather the satraps, the prefects and the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the justices, the magistrates, and all the officials of the provinces to come to the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Then the satraps, the prefects, the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the justices, the magistrates, and all the officials of the provinces gathered for the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. And they stood before the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. And the herald proclaimed aloud, "You are commanded, O peoples, nations, and languages, that when you hear the sound of the horn, the pipe, the lyre, the trigon, the harp, the bagpipe, and every kind of music, you are to fall down and worship the golden image that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. And whoever does not fall down and worship shall immediately be cast into a burning fiery furnace." Therefore, as soon as all the peoples heard the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music, all the peoples, nations, and languages fell down and worshiped the golden image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. So, if this sounds a little familiar, last week, we talked about God showing an image of a giant statue with a head of gold, right? Arms and chest of silver, belly of bronze, legs, thighs of iron, and feet, iron and clay mixed. Because Daniel told them, after you, you're the golden head, but there's going to be kingdoms that come after yours. Your kingdom is not going to last. Well, what does King Nebuchadnezzar do? He probably felt like, I don't want my kingdom to end. So I'm going to make a one giant statue of just gold. So maybe that'll make Babylon last forever, right? Because he probably, as he processed what Daniel was saying in the dream that we had last week, he was like, I don't want another kingdom to come after mine. I want my kingdom to last forever. So that's why I believe that he makes this image based on what he saw from the Lord. He said, I don't want my kingdom to end. I want my kingdom to last forever. So I'll make the whole body of gold representing Babylon. And then maybe God wouldn't destroy it, right? So but Nebuchadnezzar immediately got the wrong lesson, right? The lesson was that God's kingdom would last forever. Nebuchadnezzar completely misinterpreted it. Well, I'll just make everything. Well, I'll last forever. Didn't want another king to come after him. He wanted to elongate his kingdom by making the golden image. And if you look at, was it 60 cubits? That's about a 7 to 9 story building. So probably as where we are on the 9th floor, looking out, and 6 meters across, probably at least half this room. That'd be a pretty big image that he made. He put it in the plain of Dura, probably some empty field-like space. That's where Dura is, outside of the city of Babylon. And he gathers all the government officials, like it's an opening ceremony, so to speak, right? The people are gathering with all the officials in Dura with the king. And the heralds have a carrying voice. He commands all the people, the languages, the tongues. And there's many people groups living in Babylon, right? Because they conquer them, but they allow them to probably keep their language. You probably learn the language of Babylon. Or the trade language is likely Aramaic. But there's all these different people groups that they had conquered when they expanded their kingdom. That's why he says all people's languages, tongues. So everyone, I don't care what your religion was before, here's what you're going to do now. When you hear the band, when you hear the orchestra, it likely they probably had orchestras at each province because the empire was large. And if you heard the other band, that band would strike up. And so throughout the whole empire, they would worship. They would bow down and worship the image. It's almost ironic, right? It says several times in this text that King Nebuchadnezzar made this image. He made it. It was made by human hands, and then he wants everyone to worship it. And so obviously, it's a false god. Right. If you have to make it with human hands, if you look at the book of Isaiah, it talks about that a lot. Like you make this thing out of wood and iron and stone and gold, and yet you think that is what brings you prosperity. He's like, that is foolish thinking. But in another sense, because it says King Nebuchadnezzar made it, he's saying, by extension, I made this. So you are worshiping by proxy, you're worshiping me, right? The King Nebuchadnezzar, I made this, so it's almost like worshiping himself, right? Because I made this, and you will worship what I make. Therefore, you worship me, and where I decide is for the people. And there's a disincentive if you do not. The disincentive is that you will be burned alive in a fiery furnace. Right? So that would unite the peoples under this idea, this God. Right? Because as empires go with your separate languages and peoples, those people tend to start revolts and revolutions, but we'll unite all the people under this one God. That was Nebuchadnezzar's idea. So they're obviously highly incentivized to bow down. Just being burned alive does not sound like a good alternative. So, for us, what does that mean? It asks the question, which God do you serve? Now, in our day, we don't have idols like that. There are people who turn and face a direction. I'm sure people in Babylon did the same thing. You could not see the image. you turn in the direction of that image. So it's much more subtle and pervasive, the idols we have here and now in Kuwait. It's easy to see the statue, but we have just as many, if not more, idols today that we can worship besides the true God, whether that is money, whether that is power, whether that is pleasure, whether that's comfort, family can be an idol. Your friends can be an idol. Yourself can be an idol. Anything that you put above God can be an idol. And we need to check our hearts regularly to see what we're serving. Are we serving Jesus fully? Is he at the top of the list? Or is he somewhere in the middle of the list? And I'm preaching to myself too. There's times where Jesus is at the top. There's other times like, you know what? I want something and I'm going to pursue that and I'm going to get it for me. So God gets knocked down a few notches on the totem pole of my life. Because it's sold. You have to, for each of us, it could be different. Prestige, right? Letters before and after your name. It can be any of these things. And Jesus said, you cannot serve him and with anything else. Right? Jesus says, you cannot serve God and mammon, which is another word for money. This is the first commandment sort of rule. I am the Lord your God, and there will be no other gods before me. So we need to make a choice. But if we're honest, we want both, right? You know, I want to have a good life on earth. I want to worship Jesus and love him and go to heaven when I die. But I also would like to have a nice, easy, comfortable life with plenty of money and some influence and affluence, right? We often want both. And I don't think it's a choice that God truly gives us. So we decide which God are we going to serve. Also, there will be pressure in your life to give up or compromise your faith. There will be times in your life, and I've gone through them, and I'm sure there'll be more coming, where you are pressured to conform to everybody else around you. Right? Everybody worship the image. Didn't matter what gods they had before, except for Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, maybe some other Jews that were living in there. There will be pressure to conform. I've had it, you know, in college, you just want to do it every in university when I was going there. It's like, yeah, you want to be cool. You want to be light. But, you know, when I've done some evangelism things, I've had people spit in my face. Doesn't feel very good. It's quite a bit of pressure to want to be light. That's a very normal human thing, but we have to overcome that through the power of the Spirit. You know, when I first started dating Stephanie, she had become a believer. She came from a Byzantine Catholic home. And her parents refused to go to her baptism because they thought she was baptized as a baby. That's what matters. And her mom said, I'm not going to that because I don't like that. And then she pressured her dad, said, well, I'm doing what my wife is doing. So her family did not come. So there's probably pressure there to do what's easy. Right? It's illegal in this country to proselytize Kuwaitis. Does that mean we should keep the law of the land or we should do God's law? No, I'm not talking about using wisdom, but the reality is God's called us to a higher standard than this world and this government, than this country. And I've done that. And probably many people have shared. Build relationships. You know, I stand up here every week and preach about Jesus being the only way in an unregistered church in this country. I've taught as my in the English literature class, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, several semesters and connected to Jesus. And there's many of you here have told me great stories, but I want to encourage you and let you know that God, darkness is not like the light. Darkness was not as pushed against the light, right? We don't wrestle against flesh and blood, but principalities and powers in the heavenly places. And those powers do not like the light of Christ. So I don't want you to come up and be surprised that you feel pressure to conform. You know, I've had other things where they're in the office, people are telling inappropriate and dirty jokes. What do you do in that situation? Do you laugh along with them? And yes, there's going to be pressure. There's going to be cost. I mean, somebody died last week, Charlie Kirk, right? Now, I'm not talking about political things, what he believed politically, but he was very clear that he was a follower of Christ first. And it cost him his life, right? So there will be pressure from family, from friends, from activities, from work. And I want to encourage you, don't give up. Don't give in. Ask the Holy Spirit for courage to represent Christ. For courage to represent Christ. Because he will give it to us if we ask him. Because we are designed for one purpose, to reflect the image of God wherever we are and wherever we go. That is God's purpose for us. Not your job, not your family, or to be a mirror. And some of those things, yes, are acceptable to be part of that. But we're first a mirror to reflect God's glory to this world. That means that sharing the gospel in words and in actions, the whole world might seem like against Christ, like in this story. Right? Number two, let's continue, 8 to 18. Therefore, at that time, certain Chaldeans, in other words for Babylonians, came forward and maliciously accused the Jews. They declared to King Nebuchadnezzar, O king, live forever. You, O king, have made a decree that every man who hears the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music shall fall down and worship the golden image. And whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast into a burning fiery furnace. There are certain Jews who you have appointed over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, pay no attention to you. They do not serve your gods or worship the gold image that you have set up. Then Nebuchadnezzar, in a furious rage, commanded that they be brought. So they brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar answered and said to them, Is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the gold image that I have set up? Now, if you are ready, when you hear the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music, to fall down and worship the image that I have made, well and good. But if you do not worship, you shall immediately be cast into a burning fiery furnace. And who is the God who will deliver you out of my hands? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered, said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If this be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. But if not, be it known to you, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up. So we need to trust Christ over affliction, right? Like I said, the Chaldeans, they were the local people. They probably did not like foreigners, maybe this sounds familiar, foreigners being leaders over them. So they give accusations to hurt or kill them. Hopefully it sounds familiar to some of you in your current situation, right? They say, O king, live forever. He is the sovereign. He reminds them of the decree to worship this golden image, that those who are not are burned alive. But he says, these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, these friends of Daniel, they're some of the officials and prefects in Babylon. They do not serve your gods or bow down to image. And Nebuchadnezzar was angry. right? This is an angry guy. I don't have a message on anger today, but think about that. Because he was angry last week about the wise men when he killed them all right there. So he is furious. And he's furious now. He brought them to him. He said, ask if serve his gods or golden image. And he gives them opportunity. In fairness, right? If you bow now, you can live. If not, you're going to be burned alive, and no god will save you from my power and my decree. That's what Nebuchadnezzar is saying. But they said, in boldness, we don't need another opportunity. We'll tell you right now, right? We are not going to do this. We're out. We serve the one true God. And he can easily deliver us from your hands, because he is greater than any king. But if not, we still will worship your gods or an image, because we will not break God's rule number one. Right? Rule number one, the number one of the Ten Commandments, you shall serve no other gods before me. So even if it costs us our lives, even if God chooses not to rescue you, we will still not do this. So we need to have faith in God's power of deliverance. Right? They believe that God could deliver them. And that were refuted the king of the greatest empire of its day. And God is greater than kings. Right? One of my life verses for myself and for others is, the heart of the king is in the hand of the Lord. He turns it like a water course wherever he will. So God controls even kings. If he controls kings, he controls everybody. And Nebuchadnezzar was the greatest king of his time. And yes, God, I told you in the first week that God gives us a sense of sovereignty as his part of the Imago Dei, the image of God. But God's sovereignty is complete and total, where our sovereignty is highly limited. So God's sovereignty trumps the sovereignty of any king, any person. And we need this faith when we are afflicted, when we are in our fiery furnace. I think we don't believe this, and that's why people don't, and I'm preaching to myself, we don't take risks for Jesus at all. And if we don't believe it, we're going to always play Christianity safe. We will go to church. We will maybe throw in a 20. Maybe pray for family once a week. But we're not going to live fully devoted and committed if we don't believe that he has power to deliver us. We will not share with coworkers. We will not be generous. We cannot be a 100% ambassador of Christ if we don't believe that God is greater than any situation we are in. If you truly believe that God can save us from any situation, we would live. I would live like the kingdom workers God's called us to in this land. Also, obedience is not based on outcomes, but it's based on our allegiance, right? They also trusted God, and we need to trust God in our suffering. They knew that God was in control. So even if he chooses not to save us for whatever reason, they still knew there's one God. So the question for us is, are we willing to give our life for God? And yes, sometimes God, like with these men, lets us fall. We were talking to James last semester about thus the testing of your faith have its full effect in our lives. God puts us in our fiery furnace for a reason, to test our faith. Can we cry out to him even if God chooses not to deliver us? And I told you at the beginning, I prayed that the cancer would be healed. I prayed they wouldn't have to go through radiation. They wouldn't have to go through chemotherapy. They wouldn't need these surgeries. that they wouldn't have significant effects. God said no to all those things. And yes, not perfectly. There's still tears. There's still pain. There's still some anger. But I still believe. I still worship Jesus. And I am encouraging you and exhorting you, don't give up when things get hard. Because things will get hard in this life. And you run to Jesus or you run from Jesus. Because I think of what Peter said when Jesus said something really hard and a lot of people left him about eating my flesh and drinking my blood. Jesus said, will you also leave my 12? He said, where else can we go? You have the words for eternal life. And one day we will all be healed from whatever your fiery furnace is you're going through. We all got that thing. It's our boss, it's our work, it's our family, it's our spouse, it's our kids, it's our parents. It's pain in our body, pain in our soul. And if we trust God, we know that one day, either in this life or the next, we will all be healed. That all the affliction will be gone. Or if you look at Hebrews 11, right? It talks about all these heroes of the faith that got what they wanted. About halfway through the chapter, he says, there's some people, they refuse to be released. And they were tortured. They were sawn in two. They were cut in half, right? They were burned alive. He says, these people have ascended to a better kingdom. Because if you believe that Jesus rose from the dead, that means we will also rise from the dead in a place that is beyond all suffering. So I also want to say God sees you. He sees what you are going through. Your affliction, especially your affliction and suffering is for him. Now, if your affliction is because you did something stupid, I don't know if God doesn't count, right? Sometimes we bring it on ourselves. But if you are suffering for him and you are looking to him, he sees you, right? It says in, I think it's the Psalms, that he stores up our tears in his bottle. So whatever your grief and your loss is, continue to look to Jesus because he has the words for eternal life. Where else are we going to go? Finally, Christ's presence over affliction. 19:25. Then Nebuchadnezzar was filled with fury, right? Because he said, we don't care what you think. And the expression of his face was changed against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He ordered the furnace heated 7 times more than is usually heated. But he ordered some of the mighty men of his army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and to cast them into the burning fiery furnace. Then these men were bound with their cloaks, their tunics, their hats, and their other garments, and they were thrown into the burning fiery furnace. Because the king's command was urgent and the furnace overheated, the flame of the fire killed those men who took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And these 3 men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell bound into the burning fiery furnace. Then King Nebuchadnezzar was astonished and rose up in haste. He declared to his counselors, did we not cast 3 men bound into the fire? They answered and said to the king, true, O king. And he answered and said, but I see 4 men unbound walking in the midst of the fire, and they are not hurt, and the appearance of the 4th is like the son of the gods.
Yeah.
Amen, right? So Nebuchadnezzar was even more angry, right? Like his face changed against them, right? Because he said, we're not shooting your image, right? It means we don't think you're sovereign either. Just said that God is greater than any king in any image. Right? You know how to experience being had a spouse. Like when you're just really angry, you just look at them like you want to murder them, right? Let's be honest, here's his church. So you see Nebuchadnezzar, how he looked towards them. He said, let's max out the furnace. 7 times 7 is a number of completion in Hebrew. So turn it up to 100%. God got the leaders in his army, the mighty men, the strongest warriors. He bound them tightly so they wouldn't escape. They were bound in all their clothes, right? Make sure that the skin is burned first for maximum suffering and pain for these men. And because it was so urgent, because King Nebuchadnezzar get what he wants when he wants it, it overheated and it killed the men who threw them in, right? They were just being close enough to throw them in, killed those people, and they fell into the furnace. What do you think they felt, right? We get the benefit of being the other half of the story, right? We know it. Imagine what they felt up until that moment. They probably thought, we're done for, right? We made a mistake. We're going to die here. And Nebuchadnezzar obviously wanted to have the best seat in the house, stood before the furnace, wants to see his people die in front of him to make an example. And he was astonished. And he checked with the counselors. I thought there were 3 men, right? And they say, no, I see 4. They're unbound. They're unharmed. They're walking around. And one is like the son of the gods, right? So he meets us. Jesus meets us in the fire. Because that's Jesus in there with those men. Yes, we see his power on the mountaintop when he delivers us. But I think we see him more, the closeness and his faithfulness in the valleys of our life, in the fire. Right? And Jesus was probably talking to them, comforting them, seeing them in their trials. And he does that for us as well. He sees you and he has suffered for us. Right? So he knows and understands what you are going through, what I am going through, what we are going through. He encourages us to continue because his presence is enough for them and for us to continue in spite of difficulty. Also, their chains are broken when we're in the fire, right? They were walking around unbound, right? And we'll see that nothing was hurt except for the things that bound them. So he, in affliction, God unbinds and breaks chains in our life. There is often sin in our lives that he wants to take away, and sometimes that can only happen through suffering, right? We often don't see when we're on the mountaintops, maybe the addictions, the selfishness, whatever pride, whatever foolishness we have. God takes those things away through the fire of affliction. Because pain drives us to God. Like Peter said, we have nowhere else to go. Right? When I had that first surgery, I had tubes coming out of me everywhere. And I could not sleep because they put these stents between my kidney and my bladder to keep them open. But because of them, it felt like they were jabbing rocks. So for 7-10 days, I didn't sleep. Because every time I lay down, the pain would be overwhelming. And they wouldn't want to give me any drug besides Panadol. FYI. Because how they do it, Kuwait. And who else could help me? Not my wife, not my kids, not even my church. And I cried out to Jesus. And even though I went through all that suffering, Jesus showed me he was there. Not perfectly, of course, but he showed me. He broke my dependence on other things.
We're out of time here.
We're out of time. The thing came up. My last point and my conclusion is this, that God's glory is over all. Then Nebuchadnezzar came near to the door of the burning fiery furnace. He declared, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, servants of the Most High God, come out and come here. Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came out from the fire. And the satrap... Maybe we're supposed to stop now. I don't know. And the satraps, the prefects, the governors, and the king's counselors gathered together and saw that the fire had not any power over the bodies of those men. The hair of their head was not singed, their cloaks were not harmed, and no smell of fire had come upon them. Nebuchadnezzar answered and said, "Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and delivered his servants, who trusted in him and set aside the king's command and yielded up their bodies rather than serve and worship any god except their own God. Therefore, I make a decree. Any people, nation, or language that speaks anything against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be torn limb from limb and their houses laid in ruins. For there is no other God who is able to rescue in this way." Then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon. When we take risks for God, like these men did, God gets the glory. Right? Glory can be a religious word, so it means like fame or renown or honor or weight. It's like God's value is over all other values that we have. All other goals and desires are subservient to him. Because our highest value, what we're made to do, is to please, honor, and obey him. And when we take risk for Jesus, God is glorified. And when we are faithful in suffering, like these men were, they were faithful in the pressure and were thrown in. When you are faithful in your suffering, church, the world sees it. If you pursue all the things that the world pursues and mitigate your suffering through all the things the world pursues, they're not interested. Because if you're doing the same thing, you just put Jesus at the top of your list. Or if you suffer and you look to Jesus and you pray to him and you live your life for him, the world is interested in that. What do you have? And that gives you an opportunity to share. I have Jesus. Because we are called, they yielded up their bodies. Right? And it calls us in the New Testament to be living sacrifices. So every day, we're sacrifices to God. We're yielding up our bodies and our minds and our spirits and our affections to Jesus. So in conclusion, Nebuchadnezzar says that there is no one able to rescue the way their God has. And he had no idea. Because perhaps in the fire, maybe Jesus told him a little bit about his plan. Because he came not just to save the bodies of those people. He came to save souls. He came down fully. Not just for a few moments with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. But he lived a whole life among us. Bodily, and love us, even in our sin, and our weakness, and our brokenness. He was the ultimate sacrifice because he faced the wrath of God. Not for his own sin, but for all of our sin. He suffered on the cross and rose 3 days later. Death could not hold him. And all those in this room, if you trust in him for that, we will all rise from the dead and be with him forever. And not just a few moments like Shadrach and Meshach and Abednego had. So all your sacrifices will be repaid a millionfold. Any suffering you have. And yes, God says he will wipe the tears from our eyes. So some of us may be crying until we reach Jesus. But at that moment, it's all over. And we spend eternity living with him and loving him and all the goodness that he has prepared for us. God will rescue us either immediately or eventually. So I want you to ask for his presence. His presence is enough for us. And it will sustain us until we meet him face to face. Let's stand up on our feet. Pray. Jesus, I know there are people in this room going through their own fiery furnace. That are in it right now or about to be thrown into it. I pray that you would be with them, that your presence would rest on them in a special way. You would hold them close. You would speak to them. You would say, "I am here. I got you because you got us, Jesus." Sustain these people.
We love you, Jesus. We ask this in your name. Amen.
Thank you so much for tuning in to Crossroads International Church. If you have questions about how to pray for, give, or get involved with CIC, visit www.ciccoate.com or check out our Instagram and Facebook account at CICQA. Have a blessed day.